Welcome to Beyond the Habit.
Moving beyond everyday assumptions of what it means to be Catholic and live the gospel with two Catholic sisters.
Who are trying to find common ground, create unity, and talk about real life issues.
Led by two sisters of St. Joseph.
That's us. I'm Sister Erin McDonald.
And I'm Sister Colleen Gibson.
Okay, so today we're here to talk about a faith that does justice. We have a guest that's going to help us break open the importance of doing the work of social justice. As Catholics, as people of faith, certainly as Catholic sisters, I think there's a really common understanding that prayer, faithfulness, and service all go together. They go hand in hand. And today we want to talk about how doing the work of justice, which is looking at root causes and what systems, what policies are creating exclusion and injustice, that are creating systems of discrimination or oppression, and how we're called to work to change those systems. And so that's a really important part of our faithfulness and our lives as Catholic sisters. And I think sometimes folks don't think of Catholic sisters as being in those places and in spaces.
Yeah, I think you're so right, Erin. You know, I think people think of sisters, you know, in places of service. You know, they think of us in classrooms. They think of us, you know, in food pantries, in soup kitchens, in all different sorts of places. But they don't necessarily think of us at rallies, you know, fighting for causes and standing with the people who we serve and advocating for issues that really matter to the communities and the people who matter most to us and that we hold dear and who, you know, we really see Christ in. And when we were thinking about this issue and, you know, faith that does justice, I thought about a couple of years ago. Do you remember in March 2018, we went to the March for Our Lives?
Oh, yeah.
Erin and I and a couple of other sisters, we all gathered together. Erin flew in from Chicago to Philadelphia, and we hopped on a bus from Philadelphia. We picked up sisters all along the way. We had Mercy Sisters. We had Sisters of Bon Secours. We got on a big bus, and we headed down to Washington, D.C. To attend the rally. And partway down, we were driving along having a grand old time. Just think of a bus full of sisters. It's as great as you could think it is. We got on this bridge. You remember this, Erin?
Yes, I do.
We got on the bridge going over some river into Maryland, and the bus just stopped. And I had been sleeping. I was taking a nap, and I woke up and I looked out the window and I thought, oh, we've parked next to a concrete wall. But really, it was fog. We were in the middle of this foggy, foggy morning. And I'm sure that's a metaphor for how justice is done. And I'm a sucker for a good metaphor. So I'm like, oh yeah, sometimes justice work, it's like you woke up and you're just in a fog. You don't know what direction to go. And I thought, oh, what are we going to do? We're going to miss the rally. We're going to miss this momentous thing that we were all excited to be at. We sat on the bus for a while, you know, we were all aflutter. And then a tow truck came, towed our bus to the next rest area. Another yellow school bus came along. There were so many buses going to DC. They had to send another bus from Philadelphia to us. Everybody piled off the bus onto the new one. We drove to DC. And you would have thought that we had taken a half hour journey. You know, people were as energized as when they got on the bus, when they got off the bus, and we had to walk to the rally. And, you know, we might have missed a couple of speeches, but the energy and the passion that our sisters bring to the causes that we care about. And, you know, the March for Our Lives was and is a cause that really matters to us about, you know, sensible gun reform. And how do we protect the people who we serve? How do we protect all people in a way that, you know, cares for people? And to be there with those youth was really a powerful experience.
Absolutely. I think that at the heart of it was about the sacredness of all life and how that is such a core tenet of our faith And our spirituality as sisters of St. Joseph and associates, our partners in mission, that is a common core value, is the sacredness of all life. And how for us as Catholic sisters, that is essential and core to who we are. It's as essential as our shared meals together, our serving our dear neighbor together, sharing prayer together, our communal life, that doing the work of justice, that standing, acting in solidarity with our brothers and sisters, especially as you referenced our Parkland brothers and sisters who had just lived through this horrendous experience of violence, that's at the core of who we are. And today we have the opportunity to talk to our guest a lot more about what does that work look like on Capitol Hill? What does that work look like to be addressing systemic injustice and how to strive towards changing our system so that we can be working towards a more loving and inclusive and just society for all?
Today, we're going to be talking with Mary Novak. Mary is the executive director of NETWORK, a lobbying group for Catholic social justice. She's a lawyer, educator, chaplain, and spiritual director, restorative justice practitioner, and activist. And we're really excited to talk to her and learn from the wealth of experience and knowledge she has to share.
Mary's also an associate with the Congregation of St. Joseph, which means she's a non-vowed member of the congregation. And she is committed to our mission and our values. So we're excited to talk to her a bit today about what it means to be an associate and also about her incredible work at NETWORK. Welcome, Mary. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you. So good to be with both of you.
Great. So we'll start with our first question. Mary, you are the executive director of NETWORK Lobby. Could you just tell us a bit about what led you to this work?
Well, it kind of depends on how far you want to go back. If you mean recently, I can say that when Sister Simone's retirement was announced in 2020 and the profile came out as to what NETWORK was looking for, I received a number of emails from folks saying, oh, I thought of you when I read this. And the first one I received was from Sister Marianne Rosenbaum, one of our sisters in Wheeling, with whom I had spent a good amount of time in Wheeling at the St. Joseph Retreat Center, where she lives. And each time I received one of those emails, I dutifully said, oh, I'll pray about it. And I swear I meant to, but I just put it in a folder and I went back to my ministry at Georgetown Law School. We were in the middle of COVID. And also, I was serving as board chair, I think still then, of the Catholic Mobilizing Network, which is a ministry of the CSJs. And we were gearing up for a huge nationwide conference on restorative justice. And so I was kind of busy. And that was also the end of October. And I wanted to see how the election would turn out as a piece of my discernment. But when the search firm called and said, your name keeps coming up. Mm-hmm. And that call came right after the election. So I took it as a sign to at least say yes to beginning to discern. Then it really was a step-by-step discernment as I engaged in the next round of interviews, met the superb folks at NETWORK, studied the organization's history and work, prepared presentations, which is what they do when you're doing through an interview process like this. And at one point, I went to the Jesuit Retreat House here in Maryland, Loyola on the Potomac, for a silent weekend retreat of prayer and reflection. And I finally said yes in February of last year. But it really was an unfolding discernment as I continued to gather input. Now, if you want to go back even further, then I would say what ultimately led me here was my brother's first psychotic break. When I was 21. And I was working in a retail store. I had quit college because I wasn't very good at studying back then. But when he became system involved and my family did not know how to navigate the criminal legal system or the mental health system, I knew pretty readily that I was called to learn how to study, to go back to school so I could serve my family. which turned into serving the world all these decades later, listening to where I was called each period of my life. My brother lived most of his life with severe mental illness, and he died 2 months ago. He was the most consequential person in my life, bar none. My accompaniment, my encounter of him with him, and my accompaniment of him really led me to sitting in this chair today. And so I'm just grateful for the two of you creating the space for me to bring him into this circle with us. So thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. What a powerful story. And it's so touching to me as well to just think about how these unexpected moments in life can really change our trajectory without even knowing, you know, that these moments can emerge, sometimes painful, sometimes joyful, sometimes a mix of both. And, you know, with an open and discerning heart, it's incredible where life can lead and how it can unfold. And I think that's a really powerful story. Thank you.
I'm amazed too, Mary, when you speak about how the spirit worked through you. You know, the initial feels like, oh yeah, I'll pray on it later. Like, I'll come back to this later. These people are recognizing these gifts, but yeah, when I get time, and then the firm calls, and then that image of your brother, you know, traveling with you and being with you, you know, in that space, in the, this ministry that you've committed to. And I wonder, you know, coming into the position in April of 2021, is still a chaotic time in the midst of COVID. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about, you know, over the course of this, a little over a year of serving as the executive director, how has his presence been with you? But how has the spirit kind of guided you in this year? How have you learned? What has surprised you in the position that you're in?
It's a great question. I think what surprised me the most is finding something quite different on Capitol Hill than I expected. There's a way that we talk about Washington being a swamp, right? But I also, because of this position at Network and where Network has been brought to over these 50 years by Catholic Sisters, you know, I'm the first lay leader of Network. It has been led by Catholic Sisters up until this point. Network's reputation on Capitol Hill is superb because of Catholic Sisters and the moral grounding that they bring to everything they do and the integrity with which they have done the work on Capitol Hill. And with people like Sister Catherine Pinkerton, who is, you know, part of our congregation, Erin, and she helped birth all these faith and public life organizations and mentored their leaders over the decades that she was here working at Network. So Network is part of a group of committed faith-based advocates on Capitol Hill that really keep us sane and grounded during this particularly difficult, polarized time on Capitol Hill. And I think that that's what surprised me the most, is how Catholic Sisters have truly led the way. Network was the first Catholic lobby on Capitol Hill. It wasn't the first faith-based lobby, but it was among the first. And Network and the sisters that preceded us have helped grow this community on Capitol Hill. And that has blown me away, absolutely blown me away.
Thank you so much, Mary. I think there's so much to learn in the work that you do. And I think that it's so inspirational to even hear, you know, I think of Network as a trusted source, but that, you know, the people you're interacting with each day see Network as this trusted source in the lobby.
And they often talk about sisters who have long since passed. And it's really heartening. It's really heartening. It keeps me going. I think it keeps all of us going in this work, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of Catholic Sisters and Sisters of St. Joseph and Associates, I'm wondering if you could speak to us a little bit about how our charism, which is means kind of our particular type of spirituality, sort of the unique flavor of who we are in this family of Saint Joseph, derived from the Gospel of John and the scripture of loving God and neighbor without distinction. That's very iconic of Sisters of Saint Joseph, charism being rooted in unioning love and reconciliation. As an associate, you know, you too are a really significant part of this charism family. And so how do you feel that you bring that spirit of unioning love and reconciliation, of loving God and neighbor without distinction, to the work on Capitol Hill? Because I feel like that could be really challenging and really important. And so how do you feel that is a part of your work?
It's a great question. Thank you. Everything that Network does and has done since the very beginning is grounded in Catholic social teaching. That is foundational for our work. And so the Dear Neighbor is the basis upon which I understand Catholic social teaching and all that it requires. Because fundamental to our belief is that we are all made in the image and likeness of God, right? And so everything else flows from that foundation. Mm-hmm. So back to your question, Colleen, I found this surprising. We actually use Catholic social teaching in our messaging. I mean, we get to be public about the foundations of our faith, speaking as Network Lobby, right? And foundational to Catholic social teaching is the Dear Neighbor charism. Now, I'm also deeply formed in Ignatian spirituality. I'm an Ignatian spiritual director, having done the long retreat probably 25 years ago. But every year, I do my 8-day silent retreat. And that renews my spirit to come back to this really, really polarized space on Capitol Hill in Washington, right? And so I'm coming up on my 8-day soon. It's going to be the week after next. And like usually this time of year, I start to unravel a little bit because I know it's coming.
Are you counting down?
I am counting down.
The ticker clock to start of your retreat.
But I mentioned that shoring up my spiritual life is critical because also what we do is a political ministry. It's not just lobbying. Sisters named what Network does 50 years ago as a political ministry. So we also accompany folks on Capitol Hill, staffers, you know, members of Congress who get beaten up all the time. We send them loving notes. We touch in with them. And this is a particularly important time for that. I was just having lunch with somebody who said, "Do you know the turnover of staffers on the Hill since January 6th last year because of the trauma that they experienced?" And not a lot of them were well supported in that trauma experience. I mean, you saw the videos. Those were just clips. Can you imagine being in lockdown in the way they were for hours and hours and hours? So we know that all of us who are trauma-informed, we know what that does to your psyche, what it does to your spirituality. And so our work from Network is to be a presence to folks in this space. And that is also bringing our Dear Neighbor charism to this work, right? Mm-hmm. Is loving all of them on Capitol Hill the same way we would more inherently love folks on the margins, right? It's bringing that same spirit to real conflict spaces and hoping to love people through it.
That's so amazing, Mary. I think, you know, you never think of that. I never would have thought of the trauma of January 6th. But to be there and to be present and to bring Catholic social teaching to bear, you know, not to say, oh, here are the issues that we need to deal with, but, you know, here are people who need to be in relationship. And, you know, my dear neighbor is the next person who I encounter. And so if my dear neighbor who's on Capitol Hill is hurting, I need to be with them.
Yeah, it's powerful to think about, you know, use the reference of accompaniment, that the work you're doing in Capitol Hill, the lobbying and so forth, is a type of spiritual accompaniment of walking with people in a very particular and faithful way. And I think that's definitely feels like a shift for me too, as something to really underscore as significant in what you're doing that makes it a bit unique from other, I imagine, unique from other similar organizations that might also be doing lobbying and justice work, is bringing that spirit to it that you're doing. So, yeah.
Mary, I'm amazed, you know, everything that you've done in your life, you know, as a lawyer, as a spiritual director, speaking about, you know, the significance of Ignatian spirituality to your life. And part of this podcast, as we were thinking about and thinking about the conversations we wanted to have, you know, we wanted to talk to people about real experiences of faith and being on that journey of faith and how to integrate our lives into our faith, you know, that they can't be separate. I think you do that so well. And we hear over and over from people, you know, there's this hunger. How do I grow in my own spirituality? How do I grow? So I wonder if you could speak a little bit about your own journey of faith and what does faith mean to you?
Well, first of all, I didn't have a chance to do this at the beginning. So I do want to say to you, Erin and Colleen, congratulations on this podcast and launching it. I admire the two of you so much. And I am so grateful that you have invited me into this space with you. I hope that you will invite me back in subsequent seasons. And I hope you have many seasons in this process. I've actually shared with you a lot about my journey, about how my faith animates everything I do in my life. It is so core to my being. That said, because I am Ignatian animated and trained in theology by Jesuits, I believe so deeply in this God-human project. I know in the depths of my being that we are what Pope Francis says, not in the midst of an era of change, but in the change of era. We're really in the midst of a paradigmatic shift. And so what does that require of us? It requires that we take seriously our spiritual journeys and be very disciplined about them. Because otherwise, it looks like a whole lot of chaos. And you can really feel it here on Capitol Hill sometimes. It requires an interior discipline and journey that I have the privilege of calling many people to and get to live out myself. So, as I mentioned, I'm getting ready to go on my 8-day retreat, but the journey requires me to have a daily practice, a daily morning prayer practice, a daily examine practice. I also set aside important times every week for just silence to integrate all that this short period of time has brought me. And in that integration process, I see a lot more. And then I can go back and repair relationships if I need to, or, you know, fill in gaps. Now, why do I mention all that? It's because all along the way, I have found there were times that I really wanted to leave the church. I mean, being a woman in the church is not easy sometimes, as you know. But rather than lean out, I've leaned in. And every time I've leaned in, another mentor or spiritual director has shown up to lead me deeper so that I can be present in this moment to network and to sisters across the country and our base. At a very important time, kind of in the life of the church and the life of the country, actually. And I wouldn't be able to do this any other way. I'll leave it at that. But, well, no, let me say one more thing. I have the joy to do this work with women religious in the United States, who are quite simply part of my understanding of who will lead the way through this change of era. You all have been preparing for this for centuries. I don't know if I could be doing this without being surrounded by this incredible love and energy of women religious.
So you've, I think, highlighted a number of really significant points. And so there's part of me where my brain is like, whoa, there's like 5 questions here. There's so much intersectionality around a number of things you've named. But I'd like to lean in a bit to perhaps this intersectionality around kind of church and state and women, and a powerful sort of crossroads there, I think, in many ways. So what I'm getting at is I know that a lot of everyday Catholics have this understanding that church and state should be two separate things. And to a degree, there's truth to that. And yet, as people of faith, there is this intersecting point of how we are called to do the work of social justice, to do the work of looking at root causes and systemic change. And, you know, Pope Francis says, good Catholics meddle in politics, that there is a place for the intersectionality of people of faith and doing the work of systemic change. And you've named women religious, having had a really quite a rich history of being a part of that. So this is a complex question, I guess, but if you could speak a little bit, because you're already naming some of it, but to speak, I think, really with a pinpoint there on the importance of all people of faith recognizing the importance of doing the work of justice, and especially women, not necessarily exclusively women religious, but, you know, the work of women. So have at it.
Well, you know, I do want to come back to Pope Francis, and the reason I am doing that, not because he's just speaking to Catholics. I think Pope Francis is speaking to the whole world. That's how he has lived ever since he was elected. And the world actually responds really well to him. He talks, as you said, Aaron, that people of faith do meddle in politics. What he also says is the highest form of charity is the work of a politician for the common good. Now, it's very clear he's talking about politics for the common good. So I think that therein lies the recognition of how important this work of being grounded in a faith tradition and not in a special interest is critical. So we are but a few compared to the K Street lobbyists who get paid enormous amounts of money and represent major financial interests on Capitol Hill. Across the spectrum politically, we do not inhabit that space. We bring in the voice of the common good. Now, we may disagree with other faith traditions about what exactly that common good, how it shows up in this particular healthcare space, labor space, housing space, whatever. But when we walk into the room, the staff or the members of Congress know we're speaking not from financial interests, but from a constituency and grounded in values. And for us, it's Catholic social teaching. So it really does feel like a vocation space for us at Network. I don't know if I can speak for other faith traditions in that way, but that's been my experience of them as well. And yes, that is different than a church-state separation required by the Constitution. What we're hearing from our faith tradition, and I'm hearing that from my interfaith colleagues, is that our faith tradition requires us to show up on Capitol Hill and make the cases that we're making. That's different than having the church drive the decisions. But those issues are actually coming up pretty readily right now.
They are, which is why, yeah, I mean, I mentioned it because I know for sure, you know, where I work and the ministry I'm doing, there is some of that. I work with college students, and that is some of the grappling with how do I do this? Where are the parameters and where are the boundaries and what, you know, that there's a lot of that conversation. And I think a lot of people in general, especially people of faith, are trying to sort through how to navigate that civic engagement as a person of faith and where do those pieces intersect and where are the boundaries. And so I think you've broken some of that open really well, and perhaps that'd be a great part too.
Well, let me add to this. This is why the spirituality becomes really important, because it also means there's no complete roadmap on how to do it. It is really about discernment, taking in data, study, do the deep policy analysis, pray over it, right? I mean, it's a whole deal. That's how we engage our faith tradition in this work of politics, which can be a sacred vocation.
Absolutely. Thank you. Great answer.
Thank you.
It is such a vocation, Mary. And I noted, you know, in our introduction of you, we mentioned that you're an associate of the Sisters of St. Joseph, and so a non-vowed member who commits to our mission. And even in kind of doing our research, like reading through your bio on the network site, and it's right there. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about that as a vocation, being an associate of the Sisters of St. Joseph, and how does that affect your life? You know, you've talked a lot about discernment. How does that bring community in another way, and how network fosters community?
Well, becoming a CSJ associate was so natural for me, since I knew the congregation so well, and I got to know it when I became the founding board chair of the Catholic Mobilizing Network, Gen the Use of the Death Penalty and Promote Restorative Justice. And so I worked with Sister Janet Fleshacker and Sister Mary Ann Race. And so I just got to know them really well. And they were so familiar to me without me knowing them. And I thought, oh, it's our common Ignatian spirituality, right? But then I was also in Le Puy. And one of the associates on the trip said to me, why aren't you an associate? It just feels natural that you be an associate. So I went through the process, and it has felt really natural. And so it did not change much on one hand at all for me to become an associate. And on the other hand, and this gets to the end of your question, Colleen, it did mean, and it still does mean, that I am deeply part of this community. They claim me, and I claim them. And that actually has changed everything for me. The outward behaviors are really no different. But and you know this as vowed, having taken the vows and joined community, even from one step, well, I shouldn't say one step removed, because it's not, it's just a different form, right? In this different form of relationship, it still has changed everything. And I feel the sense of community no matter where I go.
I love that point. And it changed everything. It's such a short, simple sentence, and yet brings with it such a deep, like, I felt that on a heart level, like it changed everything. And I feel that's probably an accurate reflection as well for Colleen and I and our journey, our sense of vocation and call, and in our hearts, finding a place we feel is home, and not home as in the four walls home, but that heart level home, that sense of like really that center point within where God lives in us, feeling like this is it. You have found your home. And so that piece is really important. And I feel that so many of us, young, old, middle-aged, everywhere in between, are also in that space of finding belonging. I think it's a yearning we all have, is community, and not just community as in who lives in the house next door to me, but community in the heart, community in that deep sense of interconnectedness, people who walk with you, people who love you, people who support you, people who invite you and challenge you to be your best self, with whom you share your gifts and your vocation and so forth. And so I guess just a final question here, I guess, would be, how do you feel like community supports you in your work, in your ministry, especially? Because I would imagine that it can be very trying, especially at this time in our country, so much division and polarization and arguing and finger pointing. We all feel the pinch of that. And I would find it probably very challenging to be in some of those spaces, especially in Capitol Hill. So do you feel that community is a part of what really holds you in that and helps you in that part of your ministry?
Yes, in a number of ways, and I'll name two. The first way is just what I've described already, which is the deep knowing of being part of this community. And that is indescribable in many ways, but if you have felt it, you know what I mean. The other piece is very practical. And this is where COVID has been both a gift and a curse, right? I was in and out of Wheeling all the time. I was making monthly trips to Wheeling. I was staying with the sisters in Wheeling and just being, hanging out and being part of the community in that way. COVID changed that. But what the gift of COVID has been is, you know, our circles were able to expand significantly. And those monthly gatherings, as well as all of the other community events that we have the privilege of being a part of, are now even more accessible because of Zoom. And that has been a lifesaver in the midst of what you described, Erin. I also do conflict well. I have been trained as a peace builder and in conflict work. I know how to work conflict, but there's a certain point where you just get exhausted by it. And so being in community spaces is very life-giving for me. And it really helps bring me back to my truest self and my best self. And believe me, in some of those circles, I've lost it. I've been like, this has not been a good time. And, you know, and I have been held even across the Zoom screen.
That's incredible and so important and significant. Thank you. The many ways that community is important in our spiritual journeys. So thank you for sharing that. And we're going to transition quickly. We like to invite our guests as a fun little closing activity to do what we call lightning round, which is we'll pepper off some questions and you just give the first answer that comes to mind. And so it'll be a couple of fun questions. I like to start with asking if you could sit down and have coffee with any saint, who would it be?
Joan of Arc.
Oh, what?
Ooh, okay, good sorry. Choice.
Threw me off. That's Colleen and I. She's our favorite saint. Love so her. We just had a moment right here. So now I don't even know if I can continue with lightning round. This is
I got one. Mary, what's a sound that you love?
The sound of the ocean.
Ooh, what's your favorite song or musician or type of music?
Classical.
What's the best piece of practical advice that you've ever received?
Take a beat.
Excellent. Do you have a go-to prayer or prayer style?
It's got to be Ignatian. Yeah, that's what I do. It's the exercises in 8-day form or in any other kind of form. So
yeah, you pull the daily examine out of your pocket.
You got it. Actually, it's in my head. It's like in my body.
Yeah.
It's a like, daily examine. It's just there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful to talk with you today. We deeply appreciate all of your wisdom and your experiences and the openness with which you shared it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mary.
It was also really fun. So thank you.
So Colleen, what an incredible conversation with Mary. I mean, I think she really did an incredible job challenging our perspectives and our connections between faith and justice. And as I mentioned earlier in our interview with Mary, the quote that still just really sticks with me is from Pope Francis, that good Catholics meddle in politics. And to me, that's such an important point to underscore because we have, as we've talked about, such a longstanding like expectation that as you know, we've talked about in other podcasts as well, that good sisters are about, you know, prayer, but really prayer calls us to action. And prayer is really about putting our faith into action and looking at our faith in politics. And I know that we were talking and this is something that you feel really strongly about too, right, Colleen?
I do. I mean, I think Mary makes such a good point about our faith, you know, our faith is spiritual. Our faith is grounded as Sisters of St. Joseph in our Ignatian spirituality, but our faith is also political. And I think that can be like a dirty term, you know, political. It's mm-hmm. like you're taking sides, like you're saying, oh no, I'm a Catholic Democrat. I'm a Catholic Republican. But to say like, no, our faith from the very beginning has been political. You know, Jesus talked about the reign of God and he wasn't talking about like heaven and the angels and all of this wonderful stuff. He was talking about how do we create a society in which all people are welcome and in which the human dignity of the individual person is honored? And how do we overturn structures? How do we flip tables? How do we overturn structures that are oppressive? And so I think Mary returning us to that place of saying, you know, our faith is political. It calls us to action. And so we need to look at, you know, based on the decisions that we make, who suffers, you know, who has the power in dynamics, who's present at the tables where we are having conversations and making decisions? You know, does everybody at that table look like I look like? How do these decisions that we make as a congregation, on committees, in our ministry places, how do the decisions that we make impact the larger world? And say, like, our faith should have implications for that. You don't leave your faith at the door. And as sisters, you know, we witness to that every day, to say, like, you know, it can be a pain at times when, you know, you're sitting in a thing and you're like, has anybody thought about the reign of God here? Has anybody thought about how this is going to impact other people? But I think that's what our faith calls us to, is to be political, to be like Jesus, not just in the way that we pray, but in the way that we are with people, the way that we are relationally, but also the way we interact with systems and the way we call for change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that point right there segues to, you know, so many of the phrases we use that represent our spirituality in this family of St. Joseph is from the Gospel of John, you know, loving God and neighbor without distinction. And so often synonymous, understandably, with serving the dear neighbor, which is important. People are hungry and need to be fed, and that is essential. And yet, what does loving God and neighbor look like when we start to look at systemic injustice, the root causes of poverty and exclusion and inequality? And that is an important part of our charism as well. Unioning love and reconciliation. What does that look like on a policy level, on a systems level, like not just the person sitting next to me, which is important? You know, how do I love God and neighbor in terms of the person living physically in the house next to me, but also the dear neighbor that isn't right in front of me, the dear neighbor across the country, across the globe, that sense, as you talk about, of, you know, integral ecology. How am I seeing the interconnectedness of the work of God in all that is around me? And Mary does, I think, a really powerful job today of pointing out so many of those intersecting points and the essential work we're called to do as people of faith, to not only serve one another, to not only love God and one another, but to also create systems and policies in our country that reflect those values, those gospel values that we have.
Yeah, and I think it's so true what you're saying, Erin. You know, it's a both end. You know, people matter and policy matters. And Mary says that, you know, she says, we're about policy. Network does really great work about informing the larger public about policy and also calling for change on Capitol Hill, but that they don't forget about people. And I think as we talk to her, even when she brought up January 6th and, you know, this, I don't think I had ever thought of those staffers who were on the Hill and the trauma that they experienced. You know, I've watched those videos, I've watched the hearings, all of that. And that's good engagement in policy. But to also think about the people, you know, who are the people who were involved in this, and how have I forgotten them? You know, that the call to involve people in policy means, yes, the least of these, you know, the poor, those on the margins, but it's also the people who you don't think of, the people who you can easily forget. And so, like, the staffers on the Hill seem to me like faceless people. But to think, oh no, they had a real experience there, and a scary experience, a traumatic experience. And so just giving thanks to God for the work that Network does, that they can be there and be present, and that Mary and her entire staff at Network have that background and are able to be present, or are writing notes of encouragement, are there with people on the ground. Because if you care for the people who make policy, the concerns that you bring in that caring will also be lifted up. And so I think it's just so amazing the work that Network does. And it's so good to be able to talk to Mary and hear her background, how she got into this.
Yeah. And it's so needed in a country right now that is experiencing a lot of division and polarization. how do we bring that element of seeing God in one another, to see the face of Christ in one another across the political aisles, across racial divisions, across economic separations, that how do I see the face of Christ in one another? How do I think about the other? And I think you're really highlighting how easy it is for us to sometimes get caught by the big fireworks over here and lose sight of kind of how everyone is connected, how we're all interconnected, and we are all one human family and we belong to one another. And, you know, how do we do that? And it's challenging. And I, you know, there aren't always clear answers in our messy humanness. We're trying to figure this out. But at the end of the day, how do we hold on to the sacredness of all human life and all of God's creation? And so Mary just did such a great job. I'm really inspired. I love Network. It was incredible to talk to her today. And Colleen, I really appreciate this space to continue to unpack all these nuggets of wisdom. And I hope that our listeners as well will have a lot to take away from this so that they too will be asking some of these same questions and reflecting on them themselves. So thank you. And what a great conversation today.
Yeah, and so we would invite you to check out Network, the Network Lobby. Go to their website, find out what policies that they're promoting, and find out more about Mary and her work. But really, I think, Erin, to just think about those questions. Think about, you know, how am I creating a unioning presence in the world and not sowing division? And so thank you so much, and thank you to all of you who are listening out there. We're glad to be on this journey with you. And so you've been listening to Beyond the Habit. If you enjoyed listening to us today, be sure to subscribe and follow so that you never miss an episode. We appreciate any kind reviews that you'd like to leave with us. And be sure to follow us on social media and send us an email. Maybe you have a question about something we talked about today. Maybe you have a guest that you think we should have. Email us at beyondthehabitpod, all one word, at gmail.com.
And thank you to our wonderful guest, Mary Novak, for being in conversation with us today and representing Network so well. Thank you also to all those who have made this podcast possible, especially to our congregations, the Congregation of St. Joseph and the Sisters of St. Joseph of Philadelphia, to our sound editor, Angie Hayes, our music composer, Matthew Dolan, our producer, Elizabeth Powers, and to Sister Sarah Simmons, who's an integral part of our production team.
We've had such a great time having these conversations, and we look forward to the conversations that will develop in the days ahead. We look forward to joining you next time. God bless.
Bye.